It's the TEH Podcast, episode number 254, with Leo Notenboom of AskLeo.com and Gary Rosenzweig of MacMost.com. This week, navigating Windows 10 Armageddon, or maybe not, Dark Motive, and AI videos.
And we're back. Yes, thank you. I am feeling better this week. That's why we missed last week's episode. But, you know, life goes on, head cold or not. I think the big one for today specifically, since we are actually recording on Tuesday the 14th, is that today is the official end of support for Windows 10.
Yeah.
Which is apparently a lot of news. There's been a lot of FUD. Microsoft has been leading. Now, I don't want to say they've been leading into it. They just have no vested interest in clearing up any of the FUD, which is one of the one of my pet peeves and one of the reasons I've been taking a somewhat contrarian position on it. Ultimately, you know, it is what it is. It's not really news. I just wanted to acknowledge it here today. The contrarian part of this is that I am of the opinion that, well, yeah, you can keep using Windows 10. You know,
sure.
There's nothing, I mean, you know, great. If there's a vulnerability discovered sometime, Windows 10 may not get a fix for it, but that means that it will have, you know, in order for that vulnerability to matter, it will have to apply to a large swath of people, which generally lately doesn't seem to be the case. Most of these vulnerabilities that we hear about are very obscure scenarios and very obscure situations, often enterprise situations where they're going to get a fix for it anyway. As long as you keep your own personal defenses up, you're in fine shape. And apparently, if you were to read the headlines, we are on the verge of Windows Armageddon. If you read them right, the way they interpret things, it seems like all hell will break loose tomorrow when there's no more support for Windows 10. And that's just not the case.
But it gets more clicks.
It gets so many more clicks. To be honest, so does a contrarian opinion. But the bottom line, though, is that we've been here before. I keep telling people this, and nobody wants to listen to me. We had the exact same scenario when Windows XP end of support came around, because it was very popular. Nobody wanted to switch. Vista was the next thing, and most people just really strongly disliked, to put it bluntly, Windows Vista. So they wanted to keep using Windows XP, and a bunch of them did. Nothing really happened. And the same thing happened yet again with Windows 7, the exact same scenario. A lot of people loved Windows 7. A lot of people did not like Windows 8 or 8.1. So they just wanted to keep on using Windows 7, and they did. And nothing happened. I find it very, very frustrating to see all these gloom and doom headlines and even comments on things like my YouTube videos. I've been called irresponsible for holding the position that I hold.
Really?
Wow. You know, it's history tells us. I mean, I realize that, you know, past performance is not an indicator of, but, you know, chances are, there are no absolutes. So we're always, always simply stacking the deck and understanding what the real risk is. And to me, the risk of not upgrading to Windows 11 just ain't that big a deal. Obviously, if you can, great. If you, you know, you probably should. But if you can't, or if you can't because your hardware isn't compatible, or if you can't because your brain isn't compatible, that's okay, right? There are lots of things you can do. What cracks me up is that there are a set of people that have actually intentionally put themselves in this position already, like years ago. Their position was that Windows 10 updates were themselves riskier than not taking Windows 10 updates. So they actually did whatever hack they were able to do to literally prevent Windows Update from updating Windows 10. They've been fine. they've been happy. They've been doing whatever they're doing. So anyway, that's the big thing. The big twist that Microsoft threw at us, of course, is this extended security update, which basically allows you to essentially postpone the end of support for another year. Originally, they discussed it or announced it as being a $30 for 1 year kind of option. But then they said, oh, by the way, if you jump through a couple of hoops, then you'll get it for free. Those hoops being having Bing reward points or opting to update or back up some of your settings into the cloud. But now that we're here, a lot of people have been getting it, and a lot of people have just been getting it for free. I know that in the EU they mandated that it be available for free, but even here, I'm not sure I've run across anybody that's actually paid the $30. So there's a whole lot of kerfuffle about it, and honestly, it's just not that big a deal.
I'm surprised to see so many headlines about it that, if you read into the meat of the article, the headlines are worse than the articles
This is true.
in a lot of the cases. But it is getting a lot of attention. Of course, Apple users are used to this because the annual update cycle means that every single year a support is dropped for an old version of Mac OS. So you just kind of get used to it, and you get used to people asking if is it okay if they keep using their old Mac with the old operating system or something like that. But
Yeah, and the answer is almost always sure, just be careful. And ultimately, being careful is just keep doing all the things you were supposed to be doing to begin with.
exactly.
So.
And there are other things like, sometimes there's unforeseen things like one of the biggest ones that I personally experienced with people I knew was at some point, if you're one of the millions of people that used Yahoo Mail, which was a fully like browser supported, email thing.
It's still around.
At some point, the version of Mac OS with the version of Safari that was bundled with it, like it wasn't supported anymore. Like if you were far back on that, then Yahoo Mail just didn't work. It just came up with a message saying, sorry, you're using a really old browser here. You had workarounds, like you can install Firefox, for instance, and because you had a newer version of that browser, it was okay. But it did, people that were like, I'm okay, I don't need to update, there's nothing I need in the new operating systems or with a new Mac, found out that there was something they needed. But it leaves a bad taste in your mouth because it's like, well, I didn't like there's not like there's some big new innovation in email that I wanted to get, and that's why I wanted to update. I wanted the same old features of email, being able to read it and write it. And now you're telling me I have to spend money or do something to get it. And software gets outdated or requires support. There's all sorts of little things. Everybody, it's like your computer setup is different than everybody else's. And which is one of the problems with those articles is like they could say, oh, the reason you need to go from Windows 10 to Windows 11 is this, but that might not apply to you reading the article. On the other hand, somebody may say, you don't need to update, and that may also not apply to you because you use some odd piece
Exactly.
of software and
Absolutely.
you
In
don't
fact,
need. Yeah.
we've run into a leading edge on that already with Windows 11. I believe it's QuickBooks has
Ah, there you
said
go.
that their
A common
application,
culprit.
yeah,
Yes.
they have said that they will no longer support Windows 10. And if you want to use their tax software f next year,
Yeah.
you have to use Windows 11. To which I'm saying, well, or maybe use something else other than QuickBooks.
Exactly. QuickBooks actually had the same issue with Macs like maybe 20 years ago, whereas they had an old version of QuickBooks that in a standalone software that they did not update for newer versions of the Mac hardware, like the operating system. So you had to stick with old hardware, old operating system in order to keep using QuickBooks, and they did not provide an update. So it was basically, you can't use QuickBooks on Mac anymore unless you have an old Mac. And so it put lots of people into the state where they were like, well, it's important to me, so I'm going to keep using my old Mac, not a new Mac.
And what's
Which.
frustrating is I don't want to minimize individuals' experiences, right? I mean, if
Yes.
you're, terribly invested in QuickBooks or whatever software that comes along with these kind of new requirements, and you're also invested in avoiding Windows 11 at all costs, you're in a hard place, right? If you can't afford a new machine that meets the new hardware requirements or whatever, I get it. That's painful. But it's honestly as painful as it is for that individual, you're the exception, not the rule, right?
Yeah.
You're not a sign of what's happening to absolutely everybody. For the most part, everybody is in a position where they can keep using Windows 10. Yes, eventually, some piece of software that they use will probably stop supporting Windows 10 eventually. Certainly run into this with Windows 7, right? There are applications that no longer run on Windows 7. Sometimes there are alternatives, sometimes there aren't, but the people that have continued to use Windows 7 for all these years have run into this kind of situation. And eventually that's going to happen for Windows 10. But even then, you're the exception, not the rule. Chances are most people will have actually gotten a new machine for other reasons that have come with Windows 11 pre-installed, or maybe at that point Windows 12, basically they sidestepped the whole issue because they had to do it. They just ended up upgrading, not because they upgraded, but because they replaced. So I don't know. It's fun times. I did want to ask you one specific question because one of the things that happened with one of the big differences between Windows 10 and Windows 11 that Microsoft has been pushing on is that back in the day, there did not used to be a Microsoft account. When you set up your machine, you set it up like, I don't know, like a Linux machine. You have an account on that machine. It's got a password. It's how you log into your machine, and it was all independent. Windows 10 allowed you to set your machine up that way, but they strongly encouraged the use of a Microsoft account when that was introduced. But Windows 10, again, still, you can set up a machine without a Microsoft account and have it just be local and have it not be tied to the Microsoft ecosystem. Windows 11, it started out that you could do that. Then they took that away. Then people discovered a workaround. Then they took that away. Then people discovered another workaround and they took that away. And there's a current workaround that Microsoft has announced that they are going to take away, so that you are pretty darn close to not being able to install Windows 11 without a Microsoft account. I believe I've discovered a new one. It's super simple, it's a little time consuming, and I'll be announcing it in an article a couple of weeks from now. But it's something I've experimented with, and yes, it's still allowing me to have Windows 11 installed from scratch with a local account only. My question to you: can you install a Mac from scratch without a Mac without an Apple account?
Yes, you can. Now, more and more things, features, and advantages of using a Mac are tied to having some sort of an account. An Apple account is what it's called. But you can buy a new Mac. You can set it up and say, I'll do this later, as far as like signing into your Apple account, and then
Right.
just not do it. And you get the operating system, you get the ability to do most of the local things you can do. You get the ability to update the operating system through the software update feature. You then, of course, are missing the obvious things, like obviously you don't have any iCloud
iCloud,
stuff at all because that it doesn't know who you are. How could it? It needs to know who you are to know where to put your stuff. The App Store, of course, you need to have an account there to be able to download software, even free software, which means you could still download software from developers on the web. But if a developer has chosen to only have their app in the App Store, then you're stuck. You can't get that anywhere else. It's easy for developers to offer both. And when I say easy, like the only piece of software I've got, I don't do it, right? My clipboard manager, right, is only App Store. Just because it's just like, oh, it's a whole bunch of other things and tools and stuff I need to do on the website to just have it so you could download it and all that. And I just said, no, I want to make this simple on me. And it's only App Store. But yeah, so technically, Clip Tools, like you would need an Apple account to get Clip Tools because there's just no other way to get it by the except for the App Store. But for other software, like anything from Adobe or utilities or any, you don't need an account with Apple. There are a few other things, like Apple Intelligence, for instance, does require an Apple account.
Okay.
Even if you say, I just want to use the onboard LLM the whole
Right.
time, there's just no option for that now. So there are like parts of the operating system now that are starting to be covered by that part of the Venn diagram where you need to
Right.
have an Apple account. But in general, no. There's like people who set up computers in public places like schools or, cafes or whatever like that can set them up without it. There are tools for actually, doing device management that will substitute in as kind of an Apple account type of thing. Like in other words, so you could do, and I have really no familiarity with the management tools, but you could do Apple account like for an individual, a management tool, device management tool for schools, offices, cafes, whatever, or nothing, no account at all. And yeah, it's perfectly fine. I mean, if I, if I had a young kid right now and I take one of my old Macs and just wipe it and reconfigure it, and I wouldn't install an Apple account on it. I wouldn't hook it up to, I just install a bunch of software and not hook it up to the internet. It would run perfectly fine as a regular old school computer, but with the modern operating system on it.
Right. Interesting. One of the frustrations from the Microsoft perspective is that, again, like with Windows 10, you can, and with Windows 11, you have to do some tap dancing to make it happen. But assuming you've got a machine that has only a local account, you have not set up a Microsoft account for it. Again, you miss out, like you do on a Mac, you miss out on features, on services, right? Like, OneDrive, it needs to know who you are. Microsoft Office subscriptions, it needs a Microsoft account. Even I think the Microsoft Office single purchase still needs a Microsoft account. Don't know about the Microsoft Store, but I suspect it's in that same bucket where, yeah, you probably can't get what you want out of the Microsoft Store without an account. The frustrating catch is that people are avoiding the Microsoft account in many cases because they explicitly don't want to run the risk of enabling OneDrive or enabling Copilot or doing whatever other things are associated with a Microsoft account. But eventually they stumble into some feature or service that they do want where they break down and they say, okay, fine, I will sign into my Microsoft account for just this. And Microsoft will say, oh, look, we have a Microsoft account, and now we're going to use it for that, and this, and this, and this, and this. And all of a sudden, you've basically undone all of these protections that you thought you were getting by not having an account. That is actually pretty frustrating. But it's the way Microsoft has been pushing things for sure.
Yeah, that's interesting. I thought Apple does a better tact on it. Like, for instance, if you set up your computer without an Apple account, you're not going to use iCloud, you're not going to do any of that. And then you go into like Messages or FaceTime, which use these systems. You could sign into those with your, oh, sign in with this account. And then it's not hooking anything else up. It's just those. So I've never tried to do that. I don't know how smoothly it works, but they are separate. Same thing for like buying, I don't know how it works on the App Store, but I know like you used to be able to sign into iTunes to buy music and not sign in anywhere else.
Right. And honestly, it should work like that. Absolutely 100%, it should work like that. But for whatever reason, Microsoft has been pushing OneDrive really, really hard over the past couple of years. They desperately want you to back up your documents in OneDrive. And the conspiracy theorists say that that's because they want to scan all your documents, although it's Microsoft Windows. If they wanted to scan your documents, they could do that already. The others are saying, well, they want you to run out of space so that you're forced to purchase more space. Whatever. My belief is that Microsoft is using quote unquote dark patterns where they will offer you a service unrelated to OneDrive that will require you to use a Microsoft account. But then, if you don't read carefully or you don't read the fine print, what you find is that enabling that service as a side effect then also signs you into OneDrive and all heck breaks loose. So, yeah, that's what people are doing. But
I
okay,
mean, they.
it sounds like Macs are doing the right thing in the sense that you can still do it and they keep things appropriately separate.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's some of it. I don't think it's they're completely clean, but it seems to be better. And the funny thing is Microsoft does the same thing with that, what did you call it, the dark
Dark
patterns.
patterns. Yep.
They do that with the Microsoft Office apps
Oh,
on
yeah.
Mac. So they really, if you're just a casual like user, just like, oh, okay, my computer is a tool for me to use. I don't want to know much about how it works. I just want to use it. I need Microsoft Word, and you just kind of install it and go about your business, and just kind of go the path of least resistance. You're going to get into OneDrive. Right,
Yes.
it's even going to be like, you'll be like, oh, well, I'm not going to do OneDrive. I'm just going to save stuff locally. And then it'll be like, oh, but it wants me to save stuff. It wants to open files from OneDrive. Like, it's going to push you in that direction. And you really have to say, no, turn that. Go over here. I want to open a file from my local drive. And that's all I want to do. And I'm going to do that each time. You could do it, but tons of people I know, because I read the comments and I've heard from individuals asking me
Absolutely.
have gotten into OneDrive without really wanting to get into OneDrive. They just installed Word and started using it and followed along.
The phrase you used is exactly the right one. It's the path of least resistance.
Yeah.
Microsoft has made the default path. If you don't pay attention, if you don't make any
Yeah.
contrary decisions, if you don't look at the appropriate options, yeah, you're going to be saving documents to OneDrive, whether you like it or not. There are ways to get around that. They are not necessarily convenient. They are not necessarily even easy to find. And that's why I call it a dark pattern, because Microsoft is just, pushing you in a direction
Sure.
that they want you to go into.
And to be fair, I think some of that goes on with Apple too. Certainly, I think if you follow the path of least resistance with getting a new Mac, you would end up on with files on iCloud Drive. Like
Yes.
you would just be like, oh, okay, it says use iCloud. Okay, yeah, sure. If it's saying I should use iCloud Drive, I guess I'll use iCloud Drive, and then you're using iCloud Drive.
It kind of sort of also depends on what do you think the motivations or the intent is behind that kind of a push. Like I said, the Microsoft side, people are believing that Microsoft is looking for more subscription revenue, or they're just wanting to look at your data or whatever. But there's actually an altruistic alternative that says, people don't back up. After all this time, people still do not back up. How about we make it easy for them to do that? Just, the internet connections are ubiquitous and fast enough. A little bit of storage gets them a long way so that the documents they're working on today, even if they delete them, because there's a recycle bin in OneDrive, even if they delete them, then the document is still recoverable, which is not something, I mean, people have to ultimately take responsibility for themselves if they're not going to use these online services. So, like I said, there's at least an argument that says there's a potential for some altruism there, but after seeing how hard Microsoft has been pushing this and how hard they make it not to do it, altruistic is not a term that I want to use with their.
I think it's maybe applies better more to Apple and Google
Yeah.
in terms of the Google in terms of Android, with Google Drive and with iCloud Drive, because I really do feel the beginnings of all of this for those two companies, and maybe it was for Microsoft and not just not anymore, was the whole like, okay, every day at every Apple store, we're going to get 50 people coming in saying, I lost my data.
Right.
And it turns out they didn't back it up or use any cloud service or whatever. So we're just going to, for people with the iPhone, we'll just have it be automatically, like their notes, their reminders, their calendar events, everything's just going to automatically be on the cloud. So they come in and they say, someone stole my iPhone. Oh, we could sell you a new one. Oh, well, great. But unfortunately, all my stuff was on my iPhone. Well, guess what? All your stuff is now on your new iPhone, like magic,
Right.
and it's still to this day for especially for those iPhone users to they don't do anything with their photos. Like really, they get somebody a new iPhone. And it's like they go and they take 1,000 photos. They're not backing them up anywhere.
Anywhere.
And then
Yep.
the phone breaks or is stolen or
Yep.
falls to the bottom of a lake. And they're like, I just lost all my photos. And then they're given it, they buy a new iPhone, and then there are all their photos to the point now where I think people are taking it for granted. Like, I think they don't know that that was how it was supposed to be. You dropped your phone in a lake, your
You're
photos are
supposed to
gone.
lose your photos,
Yeah,
yes.
they just go to Apple, and Apple says, here's your new phone. And they say, great. And all my photos are there.
Right.
Perfect. Like, why wouldn't they be? I don't understand how this works, but I just know my photos will actually be on the new phone because they
It's funny,
are.
when I replaced my Pixel earlier this year, my Pixel 6 died, screen broke for the third time, I think, and I just replaced it with a 9. And I did it all myself here at home. And it was one of the things where I turned it on. It says, "Hey, do you want me to restore?" I said, "Oh, well, guess that would be a lot easier." So I said, "Yes." And a couple hours later, everything that was on my old phone was on my new phone. The biggest dilemma for me was that I typically use these situations as an opportunity to start from scratch and not reinstall all the applications that I hadn't used forever. But I decided I just got lazy. And yeah, all the apps I wasn't using on my 6, I'm now currently not using on my 9.
Oh, there you go, consistency.
Yes. So
Cool.
anyway, okay, well, that's curious. Anyway, like I said, Windows 10, end of support today. Armageddon tomorrow? I don't think so. Oh, one point I was going to make, I mentioned earlier that it's not in Microsoft's best interest to deal with a FUD, is that from their perspective, the FUD actually pushes people in a direction that is most beneficial to Microsoft. They will buy more OneDrive space. They will buy new machines, which means new licenses for Windows and all that kind of stuff. So even though Microsoft, I'm sure, internally knows that, yeah, of course you can keep using Windows 10. No way are they ever going to say that publicly, because it just doesn't serve corporate interests. Anyway, so
Cool.
what you got?
Anyway, yo, did you say AI? You wanted me to talk about AI?
I did mention
Because of
Copilot, so
course.
there was a reference,
Yeah,
yes.
okay. Yeah, no, you're right. This is actually a topic we put on our topic ideas several weeks ago, and it's only become more pertinent. Yeah, a lot of times we put stuff on the list and we don't get to it, and then 3 weeks later I'm like, well, that nobody's talking about that anymore. That doesn't mean
Glad we
anything.
didn't talk about
And
it,
sometimes
yeah.
it's like, no, this is actually it's trying to push itself up to the top. So AI video generation. So this is something I've been really interested in for a long time. The part of AI, the little section of AI where you can type a prompt and maybe feed it some images and stuff, and it will generate video for you. And it's fascinating stuff. It's basically computer generated video, just like we've had with graphics tools and stuff in the past, but it's using AI to basically cut out a lot of work on your part of modeling and doing all this stuff. And you could just say, oh, give me a tiger and a trampoline, and it would give you video of that. And of course, the original stuff was bad. It was bad, but it was impressive because it was like it's something that is technically a tiger on a trampoline or Will Smith eating spaghetti or whatever. It just looks ridiculous. But then eventually it got better and better and better. And it's an interesting tool that could be used in a huge variety of different ways. Now, like the rest of AI, there's people that, latch on to some of the ways it's used, and just label the whole thing as bad without bothering to look at some of the other ways it could be used and how that's not as bad. But it is interesting in that in the last like 2 weeks, a big story has been, Sora 2, which is OpenAI's video generator. Obviously, Sora 2 is the successor to Sora 1, and it allows you to type. You can type a prompt, and it'll generate video. It will. You could give it images and source material, and refine the prompt and all that. And it generates a short bit. I think it's like 12 seconds now or something like that. Maybe 20. I think it's 12. And people have been using it in an interesting way because it looks kind of fake unless you work really hard at it, and then it could look kind of real. But they're leaning with Sora 2 heavily into the meme making and kind of TikTok viral video generation stuff. Instead of saying, let's make it real, let's just make it fun. Let's make it look maybe not as real as before. Like, let's scale back the real, but it gives you the opportunity to put a tiger on a trampoline. Like, instead of saying, let me find video of a tiger on a trampoline to illustrate my point, you could just say tiger on a trampoline, and then you get that. And it may not look as realistic as you want it to, but it's fun to look at. And they've put it together in what is basically like a tool like TikTok, where the whole thing is, instead of you filming yourself and putting stuff up, you just prompt out a video and share it. And then people can watch those. And the idea is, just like with any other streaming media stuff or streaming social media stuff, the good one tries to the top of the algorithm and everything. So it's fun. You can go through and see all these creative animation bits, because they look kind of animated. And then the neat thing is, on top of that, everyone you view, you can then modify. So you get tiger on a trampoline and you see it and you're like, that's cool. And then it prompts you. Like, you could just go to the next one, or you could alter this. So you could say, well, do a cheetah on a trampoline, or do a tiger and a dog on a trampoline, or whatever it is. And you could just basically make your iteration of it, which also then gets put up there for the next person to come along and make their version of your version of the previous one. So it becomes this kind of collaborative, creative, fun tool that doesn't really have much artistic thing to it. It's not like, it's just fun. It's just a little like playing around kind of thing. And it's got other parts to it. Like, for instance, you could scan yourself as a model and then use yourself in your videos and make yourself, the model of yourself, available to others, either specific others to use or the general public to use. So some, like, minor celebrities or people that want to be celebrities can actually go and do that, and people can then go and, have them pull trains with their teeth or whatever they want to, crazy thing they want to do. But it's kind of this neat way that this online video has gone. Now, there are people that are abusing it somewhat.
Course.
The it's all sorts of different gradients. Like, you could look on a different platform like TikTok or Reels or YouTube and find some of this stuff. And you could look at it and say, wow, look at that. Look at that kitten and chimpanzee that are friends or whatever. And then be like, oh, wait a minute, this isn't real. And a lot of times it's like, yeah, it's not real. And the name of the account is Sora Fun, and with the tag AI fun generated videos. So what gave you the clue? Like, they're not hiding it. Other times it's like, well, it is. They're not really saying that it's AI in the account, but they do label the video as AI, or they leave in the Sora watermark, which is AI, which tells you it's AI. So they're not hiding it, right? But it does fool you for a second. It's kind of like, oh yeah, I got you to watch this video of the chimpanzee and the kitten, and I'm not hiding that it's AI, but I got you to watch before you realized it was. Other times people do actually try to get the watermark out of there. Sora does a neat thing where the watermark jumps around. So it's not like in the corner and you could just crop it. It jumps around and you can, it's hard to miss the blurry area where they've tried to constantly
Where it used to be, yes.
trim it out. So it's interesting seeing people try to abuse it. Other people, probably the most interesting stuff is people not at all trying to abuse it, but make cool, weird science fiction fantasy looking kind of stuff. That's far more interesting than seeing, like, the run of videos of like a bear on a porch and either a little kid or a
Well, you
grandmother.
mentioned the trampoline earlier, right? There was a whole sequence that started out with something that people thought was real. What was it? What was it? Raccoons on a trampoline or something like that. And all of a sudden, people took it and ran. And all of a sudden, there were corgis on a trampoline. There were bears on a
That was all
trampoline. There
part
was,
of this, this whole thing. But it was people having fun, because obviously, if it got to you and there were no corgis on a trampoline yet, you would have been really tempted to say, well, here's
Got a
my
trampoline.
contribution, a corgis on a trampoline. There was somebody I saw, for instance, that it got to the point where it was a dog and a cat play fighting on a trampoline. And the only alteration somebody made was they changed the type of cat to the type of cat that they had, right? Because they wanted to see, so that's the level of stuff we're looking at here, right? And it made somebody happy for 30 seconds to change that and see that video. And
There is a sequence of AI-generated videos, and I don't honestly, I don't know if they were using Sora, but they were using something along those same lines. And they were basically little mini stories, you know, the 30-second or 60-second TikTok length stories, and they were like Sasquatch who had just eaten Taco Bell, running through the forest trying to figure out what was going to happen. And you know, they were funny. They were in, yes, it was completely, obviously completely AI, but it was just a bit of humor. And that's actually an interesting use of the technology that I kind of sort of appreciated.
And I when I first started to see them appearing, I, was like, oh, some of them are trying to be tricky, some of them are trying to just be fun. The neat thing about going to the like the Sora app, which is still to use Sora too, you still have to, there's a bunch of hurdles, there's invite links and stuff, but in a few weeks everybody will be able to
By
use
the
it.
way, it's still Mac or iPhone only, which is
Oh, really?
frustrating
Well, it's
for
web now too.
some of us. Okay.
Yeah. It's iPhone, the iPhone app, but also web too. But it's weird because without going into too much detail, I was trying to use the web version. And even with everything done right, it wasn't letting me into Sora 2. And then somebody said, just try on the iPhone. It's like, I don't want to do it on the iPhone version. Says, no, just do it on the, like, go to the iPhone version. And I did. And it said, do you want to use the new Sora 2? I was like, yes. And then now stop right there. Go back to the web version. And it was like, oh, the
Okay.
button for do you want to upgrade to Sora 2 is gone and I'm in Sora 2. Okay.
Excellent. Okay.
They're
Yeah.
being tricky, right?
I may
But
have to fire up my iPad and see if I can make that happen and then.
yeah. Well, and the neat thing is that when you're in the Sora app, you know it's 100% AI generated stuff. So suddenly that whole thing of like people trying to trick you falls away. And now you're just looking at creative stuff. And it reminds me of like the weird, like when you would go to web pages 30 years ago that were pixels and you could like make a pixel a color and people started painting like flags and corners and stuff. I mean, little creative, weird ideas that people came up with and you just have fun with them and you contribute to this big, huge worldwide community art project. It kind of feels like that. Plus, of course, it's helping desensitize people to like, a video may not be real, which I like. You know, a safe place to be like, all the video here is not real. Play around, enjoy, have fun. Good. Now that you've done that for an hour, you are less susceptible
I was going to
to
say,
being
be
tricked.
amazed at how realistic this looks, and then understand that when you're not on this platform, some of the things that look realistic might not be.
Yeah. It uses sound with dialogue often, which is also a new thing. And the stories are better, since it's a little bit longer, like 12 seconds or so, it actually does different story points. Like it's not just a one little action happens. There could be various things. And it's pretty good with humor. Like if you give it something vague enough, it goes for humor every time. Like
Cool.
everything is, unless you're specifically saying this is serious, it's going to make something funny kind of happen, or the character says something kind of funny or sarcastic. Like that must be built into it. It's like, make this fun, make it funny, make it entertaining. I don't
Well,
know.
now
So
I'm gonna have to go play with it.
it's fun. But now, outside of that, of course, you still have lots of people working on some serious tools, doing cool stuff as well. And the tools there are getting better and better. For generating video, for generating images, the criticism's getting harder and harder. It does seem like we are definitely entering a, like there's almost like a religious war. The people that hate AI and the people that like AI. And once again, I find myself, and I think you too, kind of in the middle of like not
Not,
being subscribing to one or the other.
it's not the AI. It's how you use it, right?
Yeah,
It's a
which
tool.
is
It's nothing
similar to
more than a
lots of
tool.
tools.
Some people use it for really good and creative and entertaining things, and some people use it for absolute garbage.
I'm looking forward to, for instance, things getting to the point, and this is a big step in that direction for educating with it, right?
Yes.
That's a big thing. Like I'm looking at, okay, 12 seconds. In 12 seconds, can I get it to generate a video that would educate people and help kind of inoculate them against a certain type of scam, like an online
So
scam,
that's a good segue for a couple of things. One is I think the 12-second limit is temporary.
Oh,
I
sure.
think that that will change. It will become actually probably pretty quickly, I suspect it'll become 30 seconds so that people can do true TikTok style videos of appropriate length and eventually a minute or longer. Here's a question that somebody asked me this morning, literally this morning. The comment was that we might want to do something to my videos that point out that they are real. I do this already on the website. In on the upper right-hand corner of the website, it says written by a real human, which links to an article that describes how I use AI. But the fact is, I'm writing my own content. At some point, the concern is that AI will be good enough that what you and I do can be generated by AI. And again, there's two paths to that, right? There's the obvious, or maybe it's not intending to deceive. It's just here's an AI talking head talking about something related to technology. They look human, they act in human ways, they've got the quirks and the verbal static or whatever. But the other path is a little scary too, and that is what happens if somebody tries to actually mimic you or me? Which is certainly, it's not happening today, but I can see it on the radar. And I honestly, it's one of those things where, if somebody tries to mimic me, well, okay, that's a sign of how successful I am because I suspect that there are more valuable people to go mimic. But the bottom line is that it's possible, and what does that do to our legitimate content when anybody can generate something that looks like us?
Yeah, I've thought about that too because I mean, clearly there is one answer, but it's not a great one, and that is, of course, we control our websites. It can't get onto our websites without us putting it there. So somebody can mimic us, but they would have to put it somewhere else. Now, that could still fool people, and there could be,
It
tons of
does.
people
Think
easily
about
fooled.
how many celebrities have these fake accounts
Yeah, fake accounts.
that just basically steal their content and then start reaching out to individuals, scamming them for money or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, it's like we have a way, if it's just we have our audience and we have a way to reach out to them or not, through our websites and say, look, this is if it's not officially here, then it's not me. It doesn't help solve the bigger problem, but it is a way to prove, like, if somebody really wanted to know, is this a real video? There is a way for them to find out. It's just a matter of like, how easy can we make these tools, or make some sort of tool or some process for them to figure that out if they're not willing to put the effort in. If they just see a video of us and they assume, and then you don't put the work in to actually verify that it's really us. And yeah, I want to, I mean, at some point, I would love it if these tools evolved at some point where I could make a video that where I don't need a camera or a microphone. The idea being that it is me, like the words are me. Like I've written the words, perhaps I've typed them, but what you see as me on the screen didn't involve a camera and it didn't involve a microphone. It's AI generated of me speak, but it's no different than if I had a camera and a microphone. As a matter of fact, it may be better because I guarantee you, if you let me write out my tutorials as an article, and say everything in them that I want to say, I will be editing them a lot more finely, spending a lot more time fine-tuning what's there and creating something of higher quality. If I could do that and press a button and then it generates the video of me talking instead of me doing it live to camera, you will get a higher quality thing at the end, as long as you're willing to overlook the fact that there's a digital interface between us, which there already is. You're not looking at me. You're looking at your screen of your computer, and that's showing you pixels. And those pixels were decompressed from bits that were sent over the internet that I had compressed that had come from the CCD in my camera of me. So it's already there. It's just
Everything is
that,
ones and zeros, yes.
yeah, we're already translating a lot of stuff to get our images to you. This is just a different way to do it that may actually improve the quality of things. I mean, I've never been felt I've been very natural on video, and I know for a fact that I could do better as a writer. So I don't know. We'll see. I would love then to be able to go and certify somehow and say, yeah, this is at macmost.com. This is, I've approved every word. I've written every word.
So here's a super geeky validation. No, maybe not. Anyway, think about this. Public key encryption and QR codes. So you generate something about your video that you then encrypt, usually using a digital signature, basically. And then you encode that as a QR code that you include in the video. Nobody else would be able to generate that QR code that actually validates against your public key. Like I said, super geeky. Nobody's going to do it, but I just thought it was interesting.
No, yeah, you could definitely do it. I mean, all the worst they could do then is pirate it and just copy it, but it's still that they'd have to keep the actual copy. So it's still you, just being shown without your permission, which is happens now anyway. But yeah, it interesting stuff. So the video space is really interesting right now,
It's
and
blowing up.
yeah, it could be fun, and especially now, kind of trying to find alternatives to like TikTok in the future. Look, I didn't expect the alternative. I thought the alternative to TikTok may become something like, Instagram Reels or whatever. I didn't expect it to come from OpenAI.
There's that. What I'm seeing as an alternative to TikTok for existing creators turns out to be YouTube, which I love. I
Well,
think that's a great direction for them to go.
yeah, no, I definitely think it's yeah, and going longer form video is always good. More options is always good. The revenue model is better for creators.
Yes.
So yeah, in general, fortunately I started there. So I'm getting the benefits, and I know you're being very successful there now too.
Yeah,
So
it's working well.
yeah.
All right,
Cool.
cool. So in the ain't it cool bucket, I gotta admit, this may concern you. This may worry you about me. So first off, we'll start here. There's a link in our show notes to YouTube Music's top 100 songs of the Netherlands. It's basically the top 100 playlist that they update regularly of what's happening in that country. I think that's pretty cool. And it's there for lots and lots of different countries. Of course, I have an affinity for the Netherlands. I've been listening to it periodically for the last few weeks, and the top, I don't know, three, four, until Taylor Swift released her album, I think the top four songs were all from the movie K-Pop Demon Hunters. Okay, fair enough. I mean, it's K-pop, it's fun music to listen to. And damn it, if that didn't get my curiosity up, we ended up watching the movie K-Pop Demon Hunters, and I liked it. It was cool. I don't know what that says about me, but I enjoyed it. So that's my is it cool for this week is K-pop Demon Hunters the movie.
Well, I've been K-pop Demon Hunters curious, so maybe I will check it out. Well, the thing is that I'm looking for, at this moment in time, I am definitely looking for entertainment that is entertaining.
Yes.
And there's a lot of stuff out there that is entertaining but also is a bit heavy.
Yes.
So, yeah, maybe I'll check it out. I really didn't have anything for this week. I've been reading stuff slowly and haven't really been watching anything new on TV. But I guess if there's been something that I thought was cool, there's a new feature in iOS 26 and also macOS 26 and all of that. It's the simplest little thing that I'm sure most people are ignoring, and I can't even do a video on it because it's so simple. And it's just called Auto Mix. What Auto Mix is when you play a playlist, instead of just either ending a track and going to the next track in music, or fading one out and fading the next one in, it actually is using a little bit of AI to blend the two tracks together in the way a DJ might if they were playing on the radio or in a club. So there's
Fascinating.
a little bit of fade in and fade out. There's a little bit of beat matching.
Right.
There's a little bit, I definitely hear a little bit of the vocal overlay, where if there's a vocal starting on the new song in from the old song and the old song's fading out instruments, you kind of hear that vocal come in first. I mean, it's really fascinating. And I have found that it right away is like, how did I even enjoy playlists before this? Like, this is really cool. I'm like listening to old playlists because it's like, oh, I want to hear this group of songs auto mix into each other between each one. And then every once in a while, if I don't do it or for whatever reason it doesn't do it, and it actually fades out the song or the song ends, I'm like, what is going on? The music has stopped for half a second. It's like, come on. So
Dead
anyway,
air, dead air. Yeah.
it's a cool feature. If you listen to music and you're on the in the Apple ecosystem, make sure you have auto mix turned on and start and maybe enjoy a few playlists with it on and see what I mean. Stupid little tiny little thing that now seems like it should have been there for the last 10 years.
Cool.
Yep.
In terms of self-promotion, I'm just going to go ahead and point people at, should I update to Windows 11 by October 2025 update? It covers a lot of what we talked about earlier in the show, but it's basically my bottom line recommendation that says, if you can, if you should, if your machine's capable, if your brain's capable, you probably should. But there are some alternatives as well. Anyway, that's askleo.com/135037. Should I update to Windows 11?
Cool. I'll point to a video of mine where I talk about text scams. I always try to educate people about scams. The best way to protect people is just to show them the scams so that they kind of recognize them as soon as they come in. And I did one before that was it went very well. It was mostly email scams, so I decided to do one where I focused on scams that just come usually over texting, a variety of things. And hey, if you know these 10, then you'll know them when you get them, and you will
So,
get most of these.
did you actually interact? Do you take the next step when you get one of these texts?
No, this
Okay,
is no, this
so it's
is I'm
just
just ta talking about each one, showing a
first
little
line only.
example, and actually, I discourage people from interacting, because every once in a while I do hear people say, "Oh, I like to mess with them," or "I like to," and the first thing is like, "No, it's not worth your time." Okay, this is they're dealing with huge numbers, right? You may think, "Oh, I'm wasting their time." It's like it's way more of a waste of your time than
Exactly.
it
Yeah,
is them.
they're probably driving 100 different telephone, 100 different
Yeah,
text
yeah.
conversations at the same time, so.
Plus the fact is that is, don't a lot of if they're good, they're basically dealing with like psychological tricks.
Yes.
Don't open yourself up. It's like, oh, if a thief is trying to rob my house, I don't open the door and start messing with them. No, don't open the door. It's like, don't even give them the chance. And some of these scams, like pig butchering and stuff, I mean, there have been instances of people being like, oh, I know what you're doing. Oh, you got me. And then the next thing 3 months later, there's
Yes.
some other scam gets pulled on them and their buddy that's kind of the scammer, but they so you just don't even want to mess. Don't mess, don't waste your time with anything. Just like you see, you delete and ignore. Move on.
Agree 100%.
Cool.
All righty. Well, I think that does us for another week. As
Yep.
always, thank you for listening. Thank you for being here. And we will see you again sometime very soon. Take care, everyone.
All
Bye-bye.
right, bye.
The show notes for this week are at tehpodcast.com/teh254. If you have a comment or question for us, be sure to leave it on the show notes page. The TEH podcast is hosted by Leo Notenboom of AskLeo.com and Gary Rosenzweig of MacMost.com and edited by Connie Delaney. I'm your synthetic announcer, Adam, from 11labs.com. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you here real soon.